Hi, Jinx and Sue Podcast, episode 94. This is your host, Joel Watson. I make an online comic called Hi, Jinx and Sue, and I make this podcast that's in your ear head right now. Episode 94 is part two of my talk with professional voice actors Yuri Lowenthal and Tara Platt. They just were announced as being cast in the Least I Could Do pilot, which my good friends at Blind Ferret Entertainment are producing for their comic Least I Could Do, leastikouldo.com. I may or may not have had a hand in their casting. I may want to take all of the credit, but I probably shouldn't, because what I may have done is forwarded an email. I probably didn't actually help that much at all. I'll take all the credit anyway. Sounds good. It's settled then. All right, so here is part two. At the end of part one, we had just pitched our idea for a blockbuster Hollywood animated feature called Mice on the Moon, which I believe was going to be coupled with a short before it called Fight Kapow. So as we pick up on this part two, we are talking about Mice on the Moon and moving forward. We're also going to be taking some listener questions from Twitter at the end of this episode. And if you like this kind of thing, if you like these more interviewee style podcasts, I'd like to keep doing them from time to time. So leave a comment on the podcast, leave a, what do you call those things? A review on iTunes, and email podcast@hijinxandsue.com if you have a question, or if there are future guests that you might like to see on this show. I do enjoy the banter back and forth with my typical crew of podcasting cohorts, but the occasional sitting down and talking to somebody with a fascinating job, such as, you know, cartoon voice actor, is something I enjoy very much. So I hope you like it. This is part two of my talk with Yuri Lowenthal, Tara Platt, Mice on the Moon, part two. Godspeed, you fancy bastards.
This is not the future we were promised. This is not the future we were counting on. This is not the world every boy and every girl envisioned. From the time we learned, we all were growing up.
Let's see, Mice on the Moon. That I want to talk about that some more. First of all, I want to roll on Mice on the Moon. I want to play the Space Princess.
You'd be a good Space Princess. You have the voice for a Space Princess.
I really do. A really gruff, low-toned Space Princess. I want to talk about some of your specific jobs that you've done and how I think they are cool, and then ask you to tell me why they are cool. The first one I noticed as I was going through your IMDb's is that, Tara, you had a part on one of my favorite shows of all time, Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about your part on Gilmore Girls.
Sure.
I unabashedly love that show like a teenage girl. I love it.
Yes, so yes. It was very fun.
It's the only way you can love that
it
show.
It was very fun. And luckily, I can speak quickly enough to actually have been cast on that show. that was the running gag and the running joke is that, you know, people who get cast on Gilmore Girls have to be able to speak very, very quickly. but anyway, so I the name of my character was Shelley. And at the time, there was a storyline with Michael York, who played Asher Fleming.
Yes, the professor in the naughty love affair with Paris.
Yes, yes. And so they decided that they needed to sort of have a little bit of, you know, just a little bit of something that was going on. So she felt a little jealous of what was happening. And so they created this character that was like the head of his fan club, introducing him on his book tour for his latest, you know, best-selling novel. And so that's what I came in for. And I just had a scene, and I had my scene luckily was with him because he was amazing to work with. But what was really funny was it was one of my first television jobs, and, you know, I showed up and I was nervous and I was excited, and, you know, I was thrilled to be working with him. And the director of the episode called me over and was like, okay, so after you say your dialogue to him, you know, this is not really a spoiler, just, you know, but after you say your dialogue to him, I want you to go over, and when you whisper in his ear, I actually want you to whisper something dirty to him. And I was like, okay. And then, of course, I'm so embarrassed trying to come up with something dirty to say to him that, like, I'm blushing, and it's supposed to be making his character blush. And so we had to do a couple takes of that, but it ended up being very, very fun. And I had
That's a great time,
and everyone was very nice to me.
That's awesome. That's one of those shows where when it's been a long time since it's been off the air, and so you don't hear about it much anymore. But when it was on, and when I was very vocal about my love of this show, people were like, "That's just like the OC or the whatever." I'm like, "No, it is not. You don't understand. It's amazing. The writing is so tight, and the characters are so well developed, and blah blah blah. And I do sound like a teenage girl, but it's amazing." I'm like. It was sort of the cream of all of that stock of sort of WB pre-CW shows where, yes, it is about a girl and her mom and their problems and their emotions, but it's so well written and so well put together.
Yeah, it really is.
Until they fired the creator, and then it kind of went downhill from there. Yeah. But that's a different story. In the same vein. Yuri, you had a part in one of my all-time favorite shows that never received any love, financially or critically, it seems, the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Agreed.
I loved that show. I could not wait to see what they were going to do next, and then it was unceremoniously canceled, just like every sci-fi thing on Fox. So tell me about your part on Sarah Connor.
Oh, man. Do you have time for that? I mean, A, it was... It's the kind of job that... You know, that I got into acting, you know, I mean, it's the kind of job that made me want to act in the first place. You know, the...
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I got into acting so that I could do things like run around nuclear submarines, being chased by killer robots, you know, carrying a blaster rifle of some sort. That's why I got into acting. So I would have the opportunity to do things like that. So when presented with, you know, with this opportunity and...
Because you were on board the ship in the future, right? Where the Terminator slug or whatever like comes onto the submarine.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I was a fan of the show too, and thankfully, a friend of mine was a writer producer on it, a guy that I went to college with, Ashley Miller, who has gone on with his partner Zach Stentz, his writing partner, to write such movies as Thor and X-Men First Class. You may have heard of them. But they worked on Fringe for a while after Sarah Connor Chronicles. But we were, you know, always big sci-fi buffs. So it was a dream come true for him to be working on a show like that, although he had worked on like Andromeda before and, you know, some other sci-fi stuff. He's a real genre guy. But he was working on this show, and I put it to him, I think, to see if there was a... If there was ever a role that was right to you know, make sure I got called in for it. I didn't want to, you know, I don't know what kind of power people have or what people, you know, people think that, oh, well, if you're a producer on the show, you can just tell people to hire other people. And that's not true.
As a quick aside, are you guys constantly on eggshells about that sort of thing? Like, I know you write the best show on television. Can I maybe?
Yeah. We don't ever want to be those people because you hope that your friends know that you want to be, like, we hope that our friends and the people that we know that we want to be doing more television and film work. And we don't want to be the jerk that, like, buzzes the fact that we're friends to be like, hey, can you help me out here, man?
Those are hard calls to make because she's right. You don't want the friendship to be compromised by, you know, the work stuff.
At the same time though, the last thing you want to hear is, oh, I didn't know you were interested in that. You know, I totally would have.
And we still hear that. Like, oh yeah, I didn't even think about that. And which is, you know, which is absolutely justified. They're worried about their life and their particular job, and it's not up to them to be considering all of their other friends who, you know, who it could benefit. That's not at all it. But
regardless, you weaseled your way up to your friend. And
I weaseled my way up to my friend, and he got me into casting. And but from there on out, at least he claims it was all me. So at least I can seek solace in that. But working on that show was great for so many reasons. A, because I'm a huge sci-fi buff and I liked the show already, despite, you know, or regardless of my friend's involvement. And it was a great team, it was a great crew. I was surrounded by great actors, you know, some, you know, character actors, you know, who I had seen in other stuff, and people, you know, like people like Theo Rossi, who I had this like huge work crush on for all his little, you know, guest star appearances and all these other shows, and now he's on Sons of Anarchy. He plays Juice on that, but like I showed up and he was on set. And I'm like, oh my god, that's that dude who I think is so cool. And, you know, oh my god, that's the chick from Razor, from Battlestar Galactica Razor. You know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, it's all I can do, and this happens both in the voiceover world and on camera world, because I'm such a fan. I have to sort of keep that in check a little bit. I don't want to come off as that weird guy until, you know, after lunch, and then I feel like I'm well enough to say something like that.
It happens a lot at conventions where you're walking around with your more famous than you friend, who then introduces you to his incredibly more famous than both of you friend, like it's no big deal. Right. And you're like, keep it together. Like, I want to. And then I always remember this episode of Seinfeld where the George learns, once you get the laugh, shut up, leave, just leave. Like, it's end on a high note.
Yep.
And yeah. I that's the best life lesson I've ever gotten from a stupid TV show, was end on a high note. So if it's like if I'm backstage at a convention and Will Wheaton says, "Oh, hey Joel, this is my friend LeVar. He was on a show that I was on. You know, I'm sure you don't know him, but oh, hi Joel, nice to meet you. I'm LeVar." If I can get a snicker out of LeVar Burton, I shut up for the rest of the day. I don't say a goddamn word after that. So it's like high note and out.
Words to live by, my friend.
It's like, as much fan squeeze as you want to do, just either say nothing or say your best thing and then shut the fuck up and just keep going about your business.
Yeah.
But it's got to be worse for you guys, though. I can imagine that.
It's the same feeling, though. You know, I mean, and we should, you know, play by the same rules. Just like I don't care who you think you are, never talk to a famous, never approach a famous person sitting and eating their meal at a restaurant.
Oh, God.
That'll be a story for another show.
We'll do that on part two.
I've got a story to tell for that. But for Sarah Connor Chronicles, it was, you know, it was getting to show up every day and, you know, get in that, you know, my post-apocalyptic submarine sonar guy gear. And they had built this amazing, you know, submarine set, you know, which is, you know, I'm sure another reason why, you know, the show had trouble maintaining is because they spent the money, you know, in really good places to make a really good show, but it ended up being expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
A really magical thing, as if that wasn't magical enough, a really magical thing happened. Usually, for when you play a smaller part on a show where you're not one of the regulars, the call you usually get, or you don't even get a call, you're watching the show.
You just get cut out. That's happened to me a number of times.
and they cut you out. Because your part was small enough, they need to make up time, whatever, who's the first to go. That guy, what he's saying really wasn't that, you know, important to the story, whatever. We're used to that.
Although it always sucks when you've called and told all your family East Coast to like tune in and they're all like, "We didn't see you." And you're like, oh no.
I was there. I was in the back behind the smoke.
Yeah.
Should have looked harder.
But something super magical happened this time, which was after we had finished shooting the episode, I got a call saying, "Hey, we shot, you know, so much of the stuff that we shot we liked and we don't want to cut. We would actually like to not only turn it into a two-part episode, but we want to bring you back to shoot more stuff."
Oh, wow.
That's the best thing.
That's the jackpot.
Yeah, so exactly. So on the show where I would actually want that to happen, it actually happened. And so they had us come back and we did, you know, we added to the stuff that we had already shot, and then they ended up turning it into a two-parter, and really left the door open for amazing things to happen, you know, in future seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
Going back to that storyline.
Now, it's got to be more as fulfilling as getting a job, any job on screen must be. It's got to be much more fulfilling if it's the subject matter you like, and then in addition to that, a show you actually like versus, you know, this is good money for a high-profile CBS procedural where I play, you know, Corpse Number 8, it's got to be more, you know, it's got to be more uplifting to actually work on something that you consider high art or good art.
Oh, sure. I mean, whenever you're working on something that you are already a fan of, regardless of what you're playing, what your role is on there, there's already that like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I get to be a part of this thing that I like. Right. Whereas if you're working on something that you don't care as much about, but you're excited that you're working, you're like, eh, well, you know, it's nice that I can say, would you like coffee with that? But, you know, it doesn't, my life is not made or broken about that.
Well, at least I have a place to live for the next 30 days. That is, like, I paid the rent and here's hoping something better comes along.
Joel, let me tell you, I got a call from my agent, from a casting director who had worked with me before. And, you know, it's one of sort of the rare occasions where they just call and they, you know, they say there's a job for you as opposed to having to audition for it. And they sent me the script, and I got the script and I looked at the cover page and it said The Dark Knight Returns. And I immediately got really uppity and furious. I'm like, you can't use that title, because that title was already used. It's already the title of one of the greatest ever written. I'm sorry, I quit, you know. And then I, you know, I got all, you know, nerdy on it. And then I opened to the front page and I started reading, and I read a couple more pages and I went, hold on a second. And I went out and got my leather bound copy.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Returns. And I opened it up and I started going through the script and reading through the graphic novel at the same time. And holy shit, they were finally making an animated version of that movie.
I just saw that. It's very faithful. It's extremely faithful.
That, you know, that was always one I said, well, I don't think they're ever really going to be able to do it right. You know, I don't think that you can do it. And as I was going through the script, I was like, oh my God, they're doing it. And it reads really well.
And they didn't update anything. It feels extremely 80s. Like, the whole thing is very 80s. And
they kept in all the newscaster stuff, which I'm sure, you know, I'm sure they had a big conversations about. We should probably cut all this boring newscaster stuff. I'm like, no, that's the book. That shows you, that's the world, you know?
And you and I were just talking about this on Twitter after I watched it, actually. You play what they call Son of Batman, or the Sons of Batman. They're the new gang that takes over after the mutants.
Right.
And your part is hinted at the end of the first half, and then you come in and more in the second half, right?
Right, exactly. And I also I played several characters sort of throughout. Because once again, we were part of the, I don't know if you call it the cleanup team or whatever, but we would come in, they had a big group of, you know, that I was standing, you know, in the studio looking around me going, holy shit, I can't believe I'm in the room with these people, you know, who I, you know, respect and admire so much. Maurice LaMarche and D. Bradley Baker and Rob Paulsen, and, you know, that it was that type of room. And, when I'd been casted, because I also played the rookie cop, you know, who does, you know, who thinks that he can go take on the Batman.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. I loved that whole scene of the wizened cop who's been around since Batman was actually a part of everything. And is like, yeah, look, kid, just look, it's donut time. All right. Don't worry about it. You know, we got to go.
Yeah.
Batman will take. Batman's going to destroy these people. I gotta call. No, I gotta call this in. I gotta arrest Batman. Yeah, arrest Batman. Let's see what happens.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And when I went into this whole thing, I was like, how much do I nerd out on this, or how much do I hold back? And well, I know Andrea Romano appreciates a good nerd as well as the best of them, as long as they can, you know, stay professional about their job. And Bruce Timm is one of the biggest nerds in the world.
Right.
I couldn't hide the fact, you know, that this was a big deal to me. And so I went and I dug through a box of old photos, and I found a photo of me from 1987 dressed as, was it 1987, 1980? When did the Tim Burton Batman come out?
89?
Was that 89?
I think it was 89 or 88, yeah.
Okay, so it was 89.
Because it was so close to the 90s that it looks like the 90s.
Right, exactly. I pulled out a photo of me dressed as a son of the Batman, because me and my friends painted our faces, and we put on trench coats and had, like, you know, baseball bats and plastic.
Oh, wow.
You know, stuff that you'd never get away with, you know, post Columbine and, you know, just right. in live in today. And went to all en masse to see the new Batman movie. And I had these photos of us. And so I grabbed a photo of me dressed like that. And I showed up at the session and I said, hey, Andrea, I got to show you something. I have proof in my hand of what a brilliant casting director you are. She said, what are you talking about? And I showed her the picture of me, because she had no idea. And she immediately grabbed me by the the, you know, the shirt and pulled me over. She said, we have to show Bruce Timm this. He's going to lose his shit. And he did. And it was just, it was amazing. It's, you know, it's one of those moments, you know, I live for those jobs.
Yeah. Where you can't, there's no way you could communicate to your younger self, like, someday you will be this thing. Like, you will actually, exactly. It's going to come true, kiddo. It's waiting for you.
In a way that there's no way I could communicate that to anyone else but myself and you, right. Know, maybe you and what that meant to me.
And honestly, even if you saw the breakdown for that job, because I mean, there's definitely been jobs that both Yuri and I have seen that were like, oh my God, we have to do this because it's the thing that's us. Right. But then you just sound like you're a crazy person. Like, then if you try to contact casting or anyone you know on the project, you really do sound like you're a crazy person. And it can only be that moment if it's already happened and you handle it all smoothly and you don't freak out and then you say, hey, by the way, this is cool because, and then that's the moment that it's all right.
Yeah, way too much of this business is pretending you're cooler than you are. Everyone should just be flopping and flailing all over the place.
I know.
You know, they're much more attractive that way.
I was in Seattle a couple of years ago for Emerald City Comic Con and, John Rogers is a guy that makes the show Leverage.
Yeah.
And our mutual friend Amy Berg was a writer on it for a long time. And so I know a lot of the same people. And I was having a drink in the Hotel Sheraton bar. And Rogers walks over and goes, hey, don't move. Stay right there. Runs off and comes back with Jonathan Frakes. Frakes picks me up by the face and goes, that's a nice Riker beard, and just runs his fingers through my beard.
That's awesome.
And it's like I'm emotionally pissing myself. I wonder if I'm actually doing it too. I probably won't know for a while, you know?
Entirely possible. When you recover from that moment in a year.
Yeah, exactly. And then he waves us over and we end up having drinks with Frakes and Rogers and being a friend of mine for like 2 hours or so. Yeah. And I was like just basking in the glow. It's the same thing where you were in awe of the thing you are currently doing as if you're watching someone else do it.
Yeah.
So it's like it's that same sort of thing where it's like, I cannot believe someone's allowing me to fulfill this childhood fantasy, especially for you in the photo, literally a childhood fantasy, like exactly the definition of those words. So that's really cool. And what's funny is my next note here was about all-time dream jobs. I think that fulfills at least an answer for you. Tara, do you have something similar, or do you have a job that you can't believe you landed, or people you got to work with that you'd been admiring your entire life?
You know, I think my all-time favorite dream job thus far has been I got to do Romeo and Juliet playing Juliet at the Civic Center, directed by John DeLancey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, John DeLancey, also a Next Generation guy.
Q.
Yeah, and it was amazing, not only to mention the fact that I didn't have much time to prepare, but it was like a sold out Valentine's Day performance, and at the performance, a woman who must have been in her 80s or 90s in a wheelchair came up to me afterward and said that she had played Juliet on Broadway or something when she was younger, and that now after seeing my performance, she finally understood it. I was like,
oh my God!
I was like, okay, awesome. I'm done. Check. I can say that I was an actor.
plus Q was there.
Yeah, exactly. he's delightful and an amazing.
We were we did the Calgary Comic Con, Calgary Expo this year, and they did the big Star Trek 25th anniversary reunion, and it was the first time the whole cast had been on the same stage in decades. It was, you know, normally it's two or three of them, or maybe up to like six of them, but all nine were there, and so they're doing this. It quickly becomes less of a panel and more of a sort of family sit down. Where they're not even really asking questions. They're just talking to each other and telling stories. And then a spotlight shines into the audience, and John DeLancey is walking through the crowd of, you know, 9,000 nerds with a bouquet of flowers. And he kind of waltzes up on stage, and no one even knew he was at the con.
Oh, wow.
That was a surprise, like, for the cast. And so he passed out, like, a single white rose to everyone on the stage in a... And then he did like signing hours after that, but they had to keep him a secret for that, the first like day or two of the con, for this big, you know, appearance or whatever. But yeah, he seems like a cool guy.
He's very cool guy.
And heartbreaking on Breaking Bad recently.
And he's voice over too. He's one of the main characters on My Little Pony right now.
That's right.
So is that why he did the documentary?
Yeah.
On the Bronies. That's why, because I think it was such a his eyes were opened to this whole other world out there that it made him want to document it.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously he knows about fandom and things like that from his Star Trek days, but to see it in a different light and a different realm was very interesting.
I feel like it's not uncommon for people like that to have more of a detachment to what fandom really is and just assume these are what my fans are like. I feel like if you spend, a decade or so traveling the Star Trek convention circuit, meeting people at your table, and then leaving and going to the hotel, you get a sense of, well, this is what these particular weirdos are like, but this can't really be a thing, And right. I don't think they really understand how much of a thing it is and how much of an identity solidifier it is for so many people. Mm-hmm. To be a fan of a thing, or to be an amazing fan of an amazing thing.
Yeah,
sure.
And so to get that perspective must be kind of an eye opener for him.
Yeah, and I think he really liked it, which is why he pursued making the documentary.
Yeah, I think he even called. Didn't he call you to talk about it? He's like, Tara, you're a voice actor person with a long resume. What is this about? it's funny because we sometimes will. On dark days, we look at what we do and we say, what type of job is this that we're not, what sort of worthless, narcissistic thing are we doing when we should be, building hospitals in Africa or, creating new vaccines or whatever. And we get down on ourselves. And I think it's contact with the fans that actually helps keep us sane in a way. Sometimes it can be creepy, sure. But for the most part, it's really reaffirming to see that you can have a hugely positive effect on people that you never knew existed, that what you do does not exist in a vacuum, and can touch people and can give people strength during hard times or make them laugh or whatever it is, and we forget that sometimes and have to be reminded. It's one of the reasons I love going to to conventions and doing it.
I feel like one of the things you miss when you perform, but you perform behind a internet or behind a microphone, mm-hmm. is that there is no audience. There is no direct reaction. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's one of the things that Twitter has given people like us, where it is almost like I can almost hear the applause or I can almost hear the laughter.
Yeah.
If I get a direct response from, I just put up a comic and now I've got some comments from people saying they liked it or whatever.
Sure.
And you do get that sort of, I'm on stage or I'm a comedian. I get this instant validation of laughter or applause. And then for you guys, the thing you just recorded might not come out for 6 months or something or a year or more,
Yeah. It takes, you generally for like an episode of Ben 10, it takes them like 8 months to animate it. Yeah.
Look, they all need to go the South Park route. Just no effort. CG animated cardboard cutouts and, a week max. That's
exactly.
About the the turnaround time for animation and that's typically involved in high quality animation. In my opinion right now, my favorite animated thing in existence is Young Justice. I absolutely love that show. And you're both Lagoon Boy mm-hmm. and Icicle Junior, right? Do you do some pickup voices as well? Or
yeah, I always pick up a little guy here, a little guy there.
Is this another one of those the higher tier geek projects that you're working on from a fanboy standpoint?
Absolutely, without a doubt. While I was not from a comic book standpoint. I hadn't read, Young Justice before. I mean, clearly I know all of these characters, so whenever I get to work on a project that is even tangentially related to, something that I know really well, it's huge. Plus, the people involved, I mean, good Lord, I showed up for that first day. And in addition to people that I work with and, on a regular basis and, respect greatly, who were there, then, like Alan Tudyk showed up and I was like, oh my God, it's Alan Tudyk. And, Bruce Davidson. And I was like, oh my God, it's Bruce Davidson. And, all these, people started showing up and I had to keep that, you know, I had to keep it in check. And it was interesting because when in that first one I played High School Junior, and then in one episode, I had one line in Atlantean, I think, as Lagoon Boy, and it was a total throwaway. And then the second season rolls around, and I was talking to Brandon Vietti, and he's like, who I'd worked with on Legion of Superheroes, which, talk about dreams come true, I played fucking Superman. Are you kidding me? How do you not just retire after that? I mean, I didn't know where to go from there.
Right.
But Brandon and I had worked together on that, and he goes, oh yeah, we're doing a time jump, and Lagoon Boy is now, you know, part of the main team. And I'm like, what? Yeah, I mean, it was one of those, here's something awesome that you weren't expecting. And it was, I mean, you never know what's.
I liked Legion of Superheroes a lot too. That was one of those shows where it's like, okay, so where's the second season? Like what?
Yeah.
Exactly.
What's going on here? You stop producing high quality stuff and then jerking it out, you know, as soon as we're,
I will tell you what usually leads to that. Besides, you know, shakeups of people, you know, at the top, you know, who want to leave their mark on something. And so they'll either cancel something or create something else to leave their mark. It's merchandise. If they're not selling toys, and by that I don't mean that they've made toys and they're just not selling because kids don't want them. I mean, if they don't hit a deadline to get toys on the shelves, you know, from a management level, that could kill a show. Even if the show is a, like Legion of Superheroes was one of those, and Young Justice, I feel the same way about it. It's a perfect storm kind of show. Like the designs are awesome. The writing is top notch. The people they've cast gelled to, you know, really well. You don't always get that on a show. You can get one of those elements, but you rarely get all of them. And that was one of those shows. And it was heartbreaking when, you know, because of management and merchandising and, you know, that, the show went away.
And I've not seen Young Justice figures. Do they do merchandising for that?
They did a first run. There's an High School Junior figure out there, I'm happy to say.
Okay.
There's an Aqualad and some other, there are a few, Kid Flash and, definitely the Superboy and
my daughter. I normally wouldn't let her watch stuff with that much punching and explosions, but she reads the Tiny Titans comic books, which were also recently canceled. But they're fantastic. So she thinks she knows all these characters already because they're pretty analogous to whoever's on that show. And so we watch it together, and she calls out all the, you know, that's Miss Martian, and that's you know, and like. Or she can watch the Teen Titans and get the other half of the people that aren't in that show. But we were walking through Walmart, and every great once in a while, if there's a lot of grocery shopping to do, I will take my daughter to the toy aisle to browse so my wife can do the shopping in 20 minutes versus an hour and a half.
Right.
If my kid's hanging off the cart, you know. So we'll go peruse the aisles and we came across a Ben 10 figure, and she was looking at it, and I go, you know, thinking she's going to think this is cool. I was like, you know, Daddy's friend Yuri is the voice of that. No fucking clue what I'm talking about. She's like, this, that makes A, that's stupid. B, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
This is Ben 10. What are you talking about? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Daddy, either say you know Ben 10 or say you don't know Ben 10, but don't tell me some story about some guy who does a voice of Ben.
First of all, you made up that name. There's no one named Yuri. Second of all, come on. We were watching Stand By Me, or I was watching Stand By Me, not appropriate for children, and she comes in the room, and I go, hey, you see that kid right there? And she goes, yeah. And I go, that's Daddy's friend Will. And she goes, he's a real person?
And I'm like, see, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm like, you. I don't know I don't even know how to begin to explain how shows are made or acting or anything right now.
Right, we're gonna revisit this later.
Luckily, that was the exact moment that Will pulled the leech off his dick and passed out. So I shit you not. And so I quickly changed the channel. And she looks over at me and goes, "What was wrong with him?" And I go, "He did not like that there were bugs in his pants." And the end.
Perfectly acceptable explanation for that scene. I've taken to when, you know, cause sometimes friends, parents will have their kids there and they'll say, hey, will you do the thing? And I'm like, you know, if they're below a certain age, I kind of don't want to because there's a disconnect.
There's a cognitive dissonance. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a voice behind it. And if the parents, usually the parents forcing me into doing it, the kid really could give a shit. But, if they force me into it, I will have the kid close their eyes. And it's funny because they'll look at me like, yeah, whatever, adult talking, I'm not even paying attention. And I go, okay, close your eyes. And they close their eyes and they're so blasé and so they're so Hollywood about the whole thing. And then I say, it's hero time. And their eyes pop open as if they expected for Ben 10 to have magically appeared right in front of them.
That's great.
It's amazing. That's great.
It's the same for me when you see any of your, you know, Futurama cast members or whatever doing the voices on YouTube clips or anything else. Like Billy West, for example, Fry is just 20-year-old Billy West. It's his voice from when he was younger. But to watch him shift into it looks like magic. It doesn't seem like a human being is actually doing that. Maurice LaMarche is the same way. You know, we've mentioned some of these people already. Rob Paulsen, John DiMaggio. These are my voiceover heroes. Who are you guys' voiceover heroes? And then we'll do a couple of listener questions and then let you guys go.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think you've already listed some that you're huge fans of.
We've covered covered a lot of bases there.
People like Dee, because they do so many things with their voices.
Dee Bradley Baker is frequently talented. Clancy Brown. I remember the first day I walked into a session, I saw Clancy Brown's name signed in for an episode of Ben 10. I got really nervous because he's always been on that list.
It's funny when someone like that gets solidified in my mind from my childhood as a certain character, and then they get recast in either the same universe or something similar, and I'm like, why does Lex Luthor now, why is his voice coming out of, you know, whatever he's done recently? And they did that recently where he was, what was it? I was watching one of the new DC animated direct-to-DVD movies, and they had him, that someone else's Lex Luthor, and they had him as a different villain. And I'm like, this is giving me brain problems because it's, you know.
Oh, exactly. And I'll always, I'll always remember him as the Kurgan from
yes.
So that was difficult as well.
Well, he's one of those rare guys that can sort of just do his own voice always. And it sounds like this, massively affected persona.
Yeah.
And it's just how the guy talks, like.
It's him. And when I was doing Legion of Superheroes, I met Dan Castellaneta came on for one episode.
Yeah.
My first thought being, of course, why would you even waste your time here? You know, I mean, seriously.
And I know what you make. I've seen the articles.
Right. Exactly. Why would you even come in? I'm sure they're not paying you anywhere near what it feels like it would be worth.
Right.
And, totally for a moment forgetting that, he's an actor and he likes doing things and he likes working and he likes doing different things. And then, of course, I expected him to come in and, really be throwing his weight around and this and that and the other. And he was the humblest, most gracious, guy that had walked into the room thus far. I mean, it was amazing. He just came in and he did his thing. And he was really nice. He even entertained. One of the things you always try not to do is when somebody like that walks in the room, you don't go up and say, do the voice, right, because you know better. And yet somebody in our cast just could not. He's like, will you please do the voice? And I expect, everybody went dead silent, expecting him to freak out on them or whatever. And he's like, sure. And he just started doing it. Because
I love
not?
That his real voice sounds more like Krusty than Homer. I think that's one of my favorite things about him.
But and it's an amazing job because you do get to meet those people, and they're all talented and great people. I don't know.
Tara, anybody for you in particular that has been a, like a major, or let's, I mean, it's, voice actor is male, voice acting is male dominated. There's no question about it. Far more so than traditional acting. So is there a female voice actor that has given you any inspiration or?
I think it's tough for her because I'm the big nerd in the family. Probably growing up watching cartoons, you didn't know.
Well,
the
I didn't
names
have a TV growing up, so
oh,
I didn't
right.
watch cartoons.
That's right.
Oh no! What's wrong with you?
She has this pop culture void for a lot of her life, and I'm the guy that always because I'm a big nerd from way back. I know all the names of the people who did all the voices from the stuff that I loved. But A, I guess not having a TV in your case.
Yeah, not having a TV definitely hindered that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even just getting to show up and go to work and work with the people that we work with, and people like Jennifer Hale are fantastic.
Yeah, she's kind of
amazing. She's kind of a whirlwind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tara Strong.
Tara Strong?
Mm-hmm. She's, extremely talented.
But at the same time, you're also in direct competition with these people too. So, do you ever find that you are losing jobs to people that you greatly respect, and you have this sort of like love hate about the situation?
Well, I mean, sure, you're gonna, they're gonna have the opportunities because they've already worked with the people, or I'm not even at the level that Yuri's at. I'm still trying to build more of a name for myself, and I'll see who they ended up casting on the job, whether it's Tara Strong or Kari Wahlgren or whoever that I know. And I'm like, oh man, I didn't get to audition for that. And there's that part of me that's like, man, if only I'd had the opportunity,
right.
But it doesn't mean that I would have booked it over them.
I think we all have a fair amount of professional jealousy, but it's tempered by the fact that when we work with them and they turn out to be really cool people, or if they're people whose work we've respected for a long time, it's hard to be too mad at them, because they've given us so much.
Yeah, and also, unlike with on-camera, like we were talking about earlier, with voiceover, I mean, they end up casting somebody that can do the job because they can do the job and they're really good at what they do. So at the end of the day, you sort of have to be like, yeah, but they're kind of awesome. So I understand why they got cast. It's not because I didn't do a good job, but because they sound more like that role.
Yeah, it's not for once, if I'd been a little prettier or a little taller or a little shorter or a little skinnier,
or if I'd sounded skinnier, or if I,
exactly. It's never about, something as uncontrollable as that. So,
we're going to finish up with a couple of, submitted questions from the listeners. The first one is for Tara specifically. One of your recurring roles is on Naruto.
Yeah.
Which, according to the people that I see walking around every convention I go to, is the most popular anime ever. I've never been sort of immersed in the world of anime. I understand it from the periphery, but Naruto seems to be the current generation's Pokemon type situation. So, real quick, tell me about your character on Naruto, and then I'll give you this question.
Sure, I play the role of Temari, and she's she's the strongest female warrior. And they're all ninja. I don't know how much you do know, but
I know about the headbands.
Yes,
that's about it.
They all wear headbands to symbolize which village they're from. The village of the sand, or the village of, wait, what's your village?
Hidden in the leaves.
Hidden in the leaves. There's different villages that the ninja are from. And my character, Temari, is the strongest female warrior, which is kind of awesome. Mm-hmm. And my brother, Gaara, is quite a character. And he is a very strong and powerful character who's very, very dark
crazy.
And crazy.
Yeah.
And so he gets a lot of attention for that. And then luckily on the show, they wisely decided to age up all the characters. So the characters go through this sort of maturing process over the course of the show, which is really exciting and interesting to not only get to play as an actor, but to see and participate in. And I think that's one of the things that people respond to so strongly about the show, is they can sort of see themselves as the characters and learn from the characters' choices and dilemmas.
Well, and here's the question. This comes from at Tiny Banana Bone. How do you feel, and I think this is also about your character too, Yuri, how do you feel about the story between Itachi and Sasuke?
Yes.
Are you looking forward to doing the actual recording of these? And I think what they're saying is in reference to future episodes that have, I guess, already been produced for the Asian market, but have not been translated to the US yet?
Yeah, because they're ahead of us. There's manga, and I don't even know how far the manga is out, mm-hmm. but in Japan, they definitely are, 50 or so episodes ahead of us here.
Do you know anything about what's happening, or do you only know once you get a script to read?
In the beginning, I used to try to read ahead or watch ahead and sort of be, but I just got to be that I didn't have time to do that anymore. So now we just sort of get the scripts, and I rely on the fans telling me about what's going on to sort of keep me up to date.
Luckily, our
director is really up to date. She stays on it so that when we show up for a session, she's like, okay, here's the situation. You may not remember because the last time we recorded was 4 months ago, but this is what had just happened, and here's this character, remember this character did that, and here's the situation. I'm like, oh yeah, right. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, you'll be mad for most of this episode. Keep that in
mind. Exactly.
You've recently been wronged. Just keep that in mind.
Right. There's a lot of revenge going on this show, especially for Yuri playing Sasuke and then dealing with Itachi, his brother. So.
Yeah, it's exciting, really dramatic stuff. And that's one of the things that keeps me interested in the show. It's not Pokemon, it's not Dragon Ball, it's not just endless fights and opportunities to sell toys.
My friend Dave and I, one of the guys that makes the comic Cyanide and Happiness, he's a frequent contributor to this podcast, and we often fill half hours at a time just doing Dragon Ball voiceovers because it's the most over the top. As skilled voice actors, does that kind of stuff bother you that there's all of this? Ugh, oh no! Now we got to go fight. I got to charge my power. And like these these overblown.
Over 9,000 blown.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say underskilled performances of sound gruff or sound confused, or sound squirrely. That's about it. That's your only major character archetype on Dragon Ball, and that certainly permeates the world of anime more than it does a lot of other types of animation. So.
Yeah.
Does that bother you that there's so much of this sort of like, it seems like they just grabbed somebody off the street who could read lines in time with pre-produced animation and do not very good voices? Or,
well, I think in part it's a style unto itself, because we are, to a certain extent, we have to do justice to the original performances, that were in the Japanese.
Yeah.
And also I think the industry has undergone a lot of changes. I think once upon a time, not as much attention was it paid to the performances. They're like, look, we just gotta crank this out. We're selling toys. We're putting this on TV. Whatever. Let's get in and get out. That was kind of first gen anime
infusion to America. Of like, hey, we've got good news. We've got 18 seasons of this show. All you have to do is record American voices and it's done.
Exactly. And at the time, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, voiceover was sort of this poo-pooed, behind the scenes. People wouldn't tell you that that's what they did. It was very much considered, the dishwasher of the restaurant. Like if you're the chef, even if you're the waiter, you're in front of people. But like nobody wanted to tell you that they were a voice actor. Like it was this other thing. Yeah. And so I think it's coming from that world and that stigma.
And I think performances over the years have gotten a lot better. And part of it, I think, is because of the internet and because of fandom. All of a sudden, people, spoke out and said, well, that sucked, or I hated that, or that should have been better, or that guy didn't sound like he knew what he was talking about or cared what he was doing. And so there's that response. Back in the day, I don't think. There wasn't any way really for the fans to respond.
And also now back then, as somebody would start to do something and it was good, there would be so much response to, oh my God, that was amazing. Look at old video games. They didn't even have voiceover in them. It was text on the screen. And then so the first time you had a video game where somebody spoke, it doesn't matter if it was really good. You're like, oh my God, the character talked.
I have the first video game I remember talking I had on Sega Genesis, which they did not have voice back then. So it was a really poorly synthesized voice for a racing game called Super Monaco GP. Mm-hmm. And it would go like, let us go. Like it was like, three, two, one, go. Like it's not, those aren't words. Like, what? How did you make a computer do that? Because that's not words. Like there's
no way. I remember because my first console was an Intellivision. And when they introduced the Intellivoice, addition to that, it was huge, but you listen to, you look back on that and it was terrible. Like why even try?
But you have to go through that step. It's walking. It's you crawl so that you can walk. It's that sort of,
And now anime is running, and unfortunately rampant piracy is making, anime dubs less, less profitable. And so they're sort of backsliding. Sometimes they'll go to foreign countries to do the dub or they'll just decide not to do a dub at all because people have already, pirated the things, and there's you know, it's tough. The industry has undergone a lot of changes. I think nowadays, you know, the industry turns out much better voice performances, though.
Speaking of video game voiceover, our second question comes from at Martin Sang. His question is, Prince of Persia, as he writes here, writes with 100 eyes. That is all, is what he says. So any thoughts on that?
It's still one of the favorite roles I've ever gotten to play, and it ties into a story that I said I would save for the podcast, and we still will save it for the next podcast.
Okay, I'll hold on to it. So there you go, Martin. Okay. You'll get your answer someday.
Yeah, exactly. That's a different that's a different story entirely. But it was great working on that first, which technically isn't the first Prince of Persia game, because I used to, you know, play Prince of Persia on my Apple IIe.
Right.
But the sessions were directed by the guy who created the game, which doesn't happen often. Usually somebody will create the game and they'll, you know, hand it off to this person, that person, because they're involved in so many different things. And because Jordan Mechner took part from the very beginning, and then also, you know, through all the, you know, putting together the story and recording the voice, it came out a really good game. And having him in the room and as a resource to ask questions and to really, you know, he was looking for perfection on that game, and so we did it until we got it right. It was a very special and particular.
I remember when that came out too. I mean, this was what, 2003, I think.
Let's see. Yeah, it must have been. Yeah, it must
so
have
this
been
was still early in the new evolution of cinematic video games. It was one of the first I remember people going apeshit over in terms of the immersiveness and sort of the cinematic nature of it. I remember all the hype because I was actually still into video games with original Xbox. I had my kid right as Xbox 360 came out, and that was the end of it. I never played a video game ever again. But I was big into video games with original Xbox, and that was one of the ones that it was like you could tell something different was happening. That
and then it got copied by, you know,
everything. Yeah, everything.
Which, you know, a good game will always engender.
And I also noticed that you don't not look like Jake Gyllenhaal. You could have been in that movie. You should have gone out for that.
Right. That'll be part of the story in the next.
Okay. Podcast. Good.
I assure you.
I can't wait to see where this goes.
This story has
Jake levels.
It has legs and suitcases and.
Right. It has fezes. It's
goodness. Our last question comes from at Trevor7. How often do you guys' conversations devolve into just saying weird stuff at each other in silly voices?
Not as much as you'd think.
So you don't bring the work home.
Not necessarily. I mean, I'm pretty silly. I'm a pretty silly person.
Yeah, you actually have to get serious for most of your roles, whereas I wish they could just sort of record the characters she plays at home.
Well, it's not like I walk around talking in funny voices, but I'm just sort of a silly person.
Because I do, and that's not my job, so maybe that's the thing.
Right. See, there you go.
Where see is I doodle and draw pictures on things.
Right.
So there you
know what's funny? No, this is true, and this is actually, I think, a legitimate question. Is I know this is wrong, and I know I'm doing this wrong, but I typically don't draw unless I consider what I'm doing to be work. I don't draw for fun much at all anymore, which is bad. It means I don't practice, but that's not good. But it now drawing feels like work. So if I have time to draw, I have time to draw work.
Right.
So it's like
right.
You got time to lean, you got time to clean. That's kind of how I feel. Do you find
– and use that quote, by the way.
But we ain't got time to bleed. So.
Right. That's the same thing. It also means nothing. Yeah. Do you find that you get – do you immerse yourself less in the world of the kind of work that you do, or do you – do you want to leave work at work, or is there ever a time, like most people who don't have set schedules, do you ever feel like you're not at work?
We never feel like we're not at work, and that's a problem.
We're not at work, but that's not that we're walking around making funny voices and reading aloud. It's that we have such
no,
passion.
Let's pretend it is, though. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. We walk around talking funny voices. No, it's because we run our own business, and we're producers and writers and actors, and we have to be generating new projects, and we have to have production meetings, and we have to come up with new ideas and be writing scripts. And so we're never not working. We're just not always working on things that people people get to see.
Yeah.
That's the sad and happy reality, I think, of this kind of job, is that you can never leave work at home or leave work at work and go home, because work is at home.
Right.
And you're the one determining how much you're going to get done that day. So
Yeah. Like, I have some friends and they're actors as well. And they recently have stopped their day job. So they've stopped working in offices and now they're just pursuing being actors. And they're like, hey, so what do you do normally? And I'm like, you really want to know what I do? Because I work 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you what I do, but.
But I don't think you're going
to
want
to. I don't think you're going to really hear it, because I don't sit around and I don't go to the beach and I don't go to Starbucks and I don't, like, I'm working. And when I'm not working, I'm working.
When I'm not working, I feel guilty. And that's the thing that I feel like I need to purge myself of, but I don't expect I ever will. It's like, if I sit down to watch TV, if I finish, let's say I've been drawing a comic for 8 hours and I get up and go sit down, I'm like, oh, I guess I can watch one episode of Mad Men. Then I got to get back to work. And I'm like, wait, that was a whole work day. Like, for a normal dude, that was a lot.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with you. And I wrestle with exactly the same thing. Because back in the day, I used to, you know, play a lot of video games and watch a lot of TV and watch a lot of movies, and I love that, you know. And I mean, it means a lot to me. It's really important, but it's hard for me to do that as much anymore. Like, I don't play games anymore, and it makes me sad sometimes. But it's hard for me to go, you know, to justify, oh yeah, after working all day, oh yeah, I should allow myself, you know, 4 hours to play video games. Or I could use that 4 hours for, you know, I could go to the gym. I could get healthy. I could eat food. I could cook. I could eat food.
One of these days, I'm gonna have to eat some of that food everybody's talking about.
Exactly. Or I could, you know, I could be writing so that I could be creating projects. I could be meeting with people about stuff. I could be, you know, and then all of a sudden, the games and the TV and the movies don't seem as important, but they are, because they bring me joy.
It's research when you get to watch a video or play a video game or watch a movie.
Believe me, I've built a career around that. I write off my movies like there's no tomorrow. I mean, it's true though. So it's like, it's good that it worked out that way. But I mean, I have to watch certain shows so I can either say they were good or bad and make comics about them. But
exactly.
Then that bleeds into excuse territory too. Like, well, I should probably watch about four of these.
Bit,
you know, I should
a little bit. But I would argue that the people who read your comics love you talking about that stuff because they've seen those movies too. And if you could not speak their language, you really couldn't write funny stuff for them.
Well, and that's the detriment too, because a lot of when you do this kind of work, a lot of creative work looks like doing nothing. Being lazy.
Exactly.
Right.
Like time spent thinking, or time spent surfing the internet so you can get an idea for something, or time spent sitting on the couch, you know, watching anything. It looks like laziness. And I always tried to convince my former employers that it wasn't, but it's like, now there's no one to answer to. I'm a list maker. I find myself spending a lot of my time each day making lists of things to do, then being overwhelmed by them and not doing them. But it's like, that's the kind of stuff I do after I've worked for 8 hours and I'm like, I don't have time to sit down. I need to make all these lists now. I need to look at them and fret. And
yeah,
then,
yeah,
and
exactly. Then,
so I think next time we talk, that's one thing we touched on when we were all in LA a few months ago, was what is the daily routine of someone who doesn't have a traditional job? And it's something I'm fascinated by. How do writers and actors and voice actors and artists, how do they spend their day? Because it's not defined. It doesn't start at 8 and end at 5. So I think when we pick up next time, that's one of the main things I want to touch on. But so our listeners can find you guys. I know they can find you both on Twitter at Yuri Lowenthal, at Tara Platt, both complicated spellings. So Google them and I'm sure you will find them. Where can they see Shelf Life, the series?
They can go to shelflifeseries.com.
Okay.
And that has all the, you know, the episodes are the old episodes archived, or it'll take you the latest one.
To our YouTube channel.
Yeah, the YouTube channel is just called Shelf Life, the series, if you wanted to go straight to YouTube on it.
Do you recommend they start with this season or start at the beginning to get some context?
I don't know that you need context when you're just dealing with silly little action figures, okay. But you know, I would hope that they enjoyed enough that they want to go back and watch all of them.
Yeah.
And plus, go ahead.
I was going to say you can. We have a Facebook page for Shelf Life as well that has a lot of, and a Tumblr page that has, you know, some behind the scenes stuff and photos and things like that. But you can get to all that stuff if you just go to shelflifeseries.com.
And where can they get the book?
Voiceoveravoiceactor.com.
Yeah, and we do have a Twitter account for that where we, you know, try to post, you know, just tidbits and
tips and things.
Tips and recommendations and stuff like that we sort of try to keep updated as well. And, you know, we try to respond to people, but it's difficult because there's a lot of people. So no, apologies if we don't get back to whatever your mm-hmm. silly, funny comment is at any given time. I try really hard on my own mm-hmm. Twitter account, but it's hard on several of them.
You can get the book straight from our website, or Barnes & Noble often carries it, or
they're out of business. No, that's the other one. Never
well, mind. No, that's, I mean, we used to be at Borders, and Amazon. Amazon is probably, I mean, I hate to say this, but Amazon is probably the cheapest place you can get it. Because they always offer really good deals.
But we offer a special if you come to our website, you can get the book and the CD because we have
hell.
CD as an accompaniment, and mm-hmm. you get it.
If you get them from the website, we'll autograph them too.
Is there anything else you'd like to make people aware of? Most of what you guys put out is meant for, you know, mass consumption by other larger entities. Is there anything else
right.
that you control that you want to make sure people know about?
We've got a film that will very likely be out by the before the end of the year called Con Artists. I think I mentioned it to you before, and we might talk about it more when we talk about conventions next time.
Awesome.
Is a mockumentary about the world of conventions and voice actors.
How could you even mock something that's already so incredibly ridiculous? I know. It's the world of conventions.
Oh, just wait.
It was the only way to approach it, really.
Mostly we're mocking ourselves. Yeah. So it's not, we're not really mocking the world of the convention. We're mocking the world of being a voiceover at a voiceover actor at a convention. So yeah. it's very silly.
I've only done a few anime cons, and one of the ones I do in Dallas gives me rare insight into some of the diva nature of some anime voiceover actors. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like
that is exactly.
You can't act like this.
That's exactly what we poke fun at, is the sort of quality of big-headedness that can happen.
That's
so
awesome.
We play heightened versions of ourselves who sort of get on this diva trip. So it should be very silly.
That's awesome. Is there a part for me?
I wish, but we've already shot it. It's almost out of post right now.
This ship has sailed, Joel, but don't think we're thinking about you.
Keep me in mind. That's all I'm saying, okay? Just anything comes up at all, any work. The one thing I've learned from this whole experience talking to you guys is badger all your friends for work if they seem to be more successful than you.
Yes,
And then ask the guy eating his sandwich to do the voice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Those are the two biggest pieces of advice we could offer
people. You can't fail. So thank you again, Yuri Lowenthal and Tara Platt. Look for all three of us in 2015, Mice on the Moon.
Yes.
we'll be in theaters everywhere.
Illustrated and animated
right.
by you.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
You're so welcome.